द्वार की जय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 18th chapter, text 20. Etatvata alam nanu suchitena gunai asamya anatisayanasya atisayanasya itaran patayataha vibhuti yasya angri renam jushate anapipshoho etavattalam nanusuchitena gunarasamayanat Tishayanasya asamyanat tishayan hidvetaran pratahayato vibhutir nishangri renam jushyaten viposho itavatalam nanasuchitena gunara samyana tishayanasya nivetaram pratayato vibhutir nishangri renam jushaten abhipsoho jushaten abhipsoho. Sangrirenam jushaten abhipsoho. Sangri renam jushatena vipsoho itavatalam nanasuchitena ladies. Bhavatalam Nanu Suchitena. Idvetaram Pratayato Vibhutir. Sangri Renam Jushatena Bhish. Word meanings. Etavata. So far. Alam. Unnecessary. Nano. If at all. Suchitena. By description. Gunai. By attributes. Asamya. Immeasurable. Anati sayanasya. Of one who is unexcelled. Hitva. Leaving aside. Itaran. Others. Partayutaha. Of those who ask for. Vibhuti. Favor of the goddess of fortune. Yasya. One whose. Angri. Feet. Renam. Dust. Jushate. Serves. Anabhipshaho. Of one who is unwilling. So the first line of this translation says, it is now ascertained. And now ascertained refers to yesterday's verse. So let me first read yesterday's verse. And this will make more sense. So this is text 19. Yes. And what to speak of those who are under the direction of the great devotees chanting the holy name of the unlimited who has unlimited potency. The personality of Godhead, unlimited in potency and transcendental by attributes, is called the Ananta, unlimited. Today's verse. It is now ascertained that he, the personality of Godhead, is unlimited and there is none equal to him. Consequently, no one can speak of him adequately. Great demigods cannot obtain the favor of the goddess of fortune even by prayers. But this very goddess renders service unto the Lord, although he is unwilling to have such service. Purport. The personality of Godhead, or the Parameshvara, Param Brahman, according to the Shrutis, has nothing to do. He has no equal. Nor does anyone excel him. He has unlimited potencies, and his every action is carried out systematically in his natural and perfect ways. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is full in himself and has nothing to accept from anyone else, including the great demigods like Brahma. Others ask for the favor of the goddess of fortune, and despite such prayers, she declines to award such favors. But still, she renders service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although he has nothing to accept from her. The personality of Godhead in his Garbhodakshayi Vishnu feature begets Brahma, Brahma, the first created person in the material world, from his navel lotus stem, and not in the womb of the goddess of fortune, who is eternally engaged in his service. These are some of the instances of his complete independence and perfection. That he has nothing to do does not mean that he is impersonal. He is transcendentally so full of inconceivable potencies that simply by his willing, everything is done without physical or personal endeavor. He is called, therefore, Yogeshwara, or the Lord of all mystic powers. So if we go to the word meanings, the first two words, etavata alam, the first three words, nanu, says, so far unnecessary, if at all. And then suchitena by description, which Prabhupada translates is that no one can describe him adequately, but if you look at the word meanings, it's saying, what's the use of trying? It's unnecessary. You never will. Not that you shouldn't try, but it's saying you won't. So the word alam, if you think you're going to try to describe his unlimited qualities, it's not necessary. You can't. It's not possible. So this verse is describing Krishna as ananta, unlimited. And there are a lot of things in this world that seem to be unlimited that are not, because obviously this world is not unlimited. So it's interesting, in Sanskrit, you have two words, duranta and ananta. So the word ananta means no anta, end. Ananta. Anta means end, without end. So that's ananta shesh, or ananta this, ananta lila in the Dhammadhar. I offer my obeisances to your Radharani and to your ananta lila, or your ananta rupam, your unlimited form. So where the end is, there isn't an end. But what's interesting is the material is called duranta. There is an end, it's just difficult to find it. It's, you know, the universe. Einstein thought the universe was unlimited. He also thought that human stupidity was unlimited. He said those are the two unlimited factors in this world, the universe and human stupidity. So he missed the first one, but he got the second one right, especially in Kali Yuga. Because Prabhupada said in Kali Yuga, there's not even passion, it's all ignorance. So duranta, you find this in a verse, duranta tamo, duranta param. And tamo means darkness, and duranta means you can't find the end of darkness. And that's a description of the ocean of material ignorance. So a devotee crosses over the ocean of material ignorance, the vast ocean, apparently unlimited. So duranta means apparently unlimited. The end is difficult to find, but it's not unlimited. And Krishna is ananta. He has no limit. So, Prabhupada said something very interesting about Krishna. He said, because Krishna is unlimited, he can't calculate how happy he is. Then Prabhupada said, well, actually, he can calculate, but as soon as he calculates, he becomes happier. So, it's like, try to be in the present moment. You can't, because it's not the present moment. It just keeps going and going. So, Krishna is dynamic, so even he can't calculate his unlimitedness, because once he calculates it, it grows. And just the concept of unlimited, it will crack our heads. And what to speak of unlimited happiness. But it's beautiful to meditate on the unlimited, because otherwise we're going to meditate on the limited and try to squeeze some pleasure out of the limited, where you have the unlimited and unlimited pleasure. So you want unlimited or you want limited? So every time we're focused on material sense gratification, we're trying to squeeze something out of something very limited. And Krishna consciousness is unlimited. For example, Satchinanda Swami, I think he went into some caves once around Govardhan and probably chanted like 108 rounds a day or some outrageous number, because nobody saw him. He was just gone all day, and he was, like my experiments with the holy name, so to speak. He just wanted to really dive into it. And so after he did that, we said, Maharaj, what's your realization? And he said, my realization is I don't think I've ever chanted the holy name before, because I finally started to get something new and different from it. So, this was after he'd been a devotee 35 years. So the unlimited nature of the holy name, that you could one day wake up and say, wow, this thing I've been doing for 35 years, it has like unlimited depth. And many devotees have this experience when they go more deeply into their chanting, that was I really chanting this mantra? This is mantra is revealing itself in new ways. So that's the beauty. We know that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It's dynamic. Krishna is, it's always wonderful. always more beautiful according to the beauty of our own consciousness than we perceive the beauty of his consciousness. So, in the purport, Prabhupada mentioned another point. He mentioned that Krishna, just by thinking or by willing, everything happens. And this is actually from a verse from Shvetashvara Upanishad. And Prabhupada said also he has nothing to do. So basically, Prabhupada was just translating this verse, Natasyam karyam karanam cha vidyate. He has nothing to do. He doesn't have to work. So, question to you, if you were God, would you work? Prabhupada said, work is punishment. People might say, I love my job, I like to work, and Prabhupada says, right, your work is punishment. In the spiritual world, there's no work. You don't have to work. Krishna's not working. He wants to play with you. He wants to dance with you. So he doesn't want to wait for you to come home from work. So, natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. He has nothing to do. Nothing to do means what? He doesn't have to work. It's all, he just thinks it. And it happens. Natat samascha vyadikascha drishyate, no one equal or greater. And then, parashya shaktir vividai, all his energies, parashya shaktir vividai vishuyate, all his energies do what? Svabhavika jnana bala kriya. Jnana, knowledge, bala, strength, and kriya, action. So we have kriya shakti here. You're in the verse today. Jnana bala kriya. Svabhaviki jnana bala kriya. Cha. So the Kriya Shakti, the Bala Shakti, Jnana Shakti. So what does it mean? Well, Prabhupada said, if you have enough money, will you do the work or will you hire someone to do the work? You'll be out playing golf and everything will go on. So sometimes, this may be difficult to explain to people. So sometimes I have to ask people, well, if you were God, what would you do? And we have to explain what God means. Why doesn't God work and why do we work? Do you have a choice? Can you exist without working? Although one time, Prabhupada was told, he said, everyone on the block is envious of us because they don't see that we're working. And we're just dancing and chanting and we have, everything is here. And he said, they're envious. And Prabhupada said, tell them to come and join. He said, but they won't. But as a side point, the sign, when they finally got that signboard, and they told Prabhupada, we got this big signboard and so many, you know, calculated how many cars drive by and how many people will see it. And Prabhupada said, on the signboard, you must write, come and join. And he didn't mean come and join the Sunday feast. He meant come live here. That's what he meant. And one of our godbrothers just told a story. I just heard the story. That when he first met Prabhupada, long hair, beard, and he bowed down and he looked up and Prabhupada looked down and said, so when are you joining? So that was like Prabhupada was, you know, very much had that vision. Everyone should join the Krishna consciousness movement. Anyway, so Krishna, he thinks about something, he wants it a certain way, and that it happens. Why? Because he's God. Because there's no energy above him interfering. What he decides happens. When you're not God, you can't decide what happens. You can only dream about it. And if you want to make it happen, you have to work very hard. Right? Very, very hard. You can make a Hollywood movie and create all this illusion, but you have to work really hard to do it. But if you're God, you control everything. So if you control everything, why would you work? You don't have to. You control. There's no energy that controls you. So then I ask people, I say, so if you were God, would you work? And they're like, okay. You know, they get it. That God is the one who controls all the energy. He doesn't have to work. And then Prabhupada said, and when you go back to the spiritual world, you don't have to work, which is the main reason I became a devotee. When I heard that, I said, where do I sign up? As I didn't want to work. I thought, this is good. This is the right movement. So When you join the spiritual world, you don't have to work. But what's so interesting, this Bala Kriya Shakti energy, we hear that in the spiritual world there are desire trees, and you just sit by the desire tree and you desire and it happens. And there's that joke or the true story. I don't know if it's a joke or not. This person sitting by the desire tree and he's thinking, I wonder if a lion's going to come and eat me. That's not the right thing to think by a desire tree because it happened. So how is it that in the spiritual world, we're like Krishna, with just by thinking it happens. So nobody can go to the spiritual world who isn't pure because they think all the wrong things. Right? Could you imagine right now if you had this Jnana Bala Kriya Shakti that whatever you willed would happen? That would be a really crazy world, wouldn't it? But that's going on in the spiritual world. As the devotee desires, it manifests because their desire is pure. It works. Here, it doesn't work. Here, if you want it, you have to work for it and you have to suffer and foam at the mouth and one day wake up and say, oh my God, is this all there is? Krishna arranged it that way. And then Krishna says, but if you go there, you can dance and play with me because we don't work there. And I sat here in this very temple room and the other temple room and heard and had the fortune of hearing many classes of Srila Prabhupada. And one class, maybe more than one, he said, become Krishna conscious in this life, you will see Krishna and you will dance with Krishna. And he said that a lot, dance with Krishna. Like, you know, if someone says, what is the goal of the Hare Krishna movement? The goal of the Hare Krishna movement is to dance with God. Because Prabhupada ended lectures with this point. You will see God, you will dance with Him. Of course, he ended many lectures that you will go back home, back to Godhead. That was very common. And what do you do when you go back home, back to Godhead? You dance with Krishna. So, what is the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement? To dance with God and to not work. Those are the two you want to join? You get to dance with God and you don't have to work. You like that. Now, Krishna's potencies, I want to relate this because it's Damodar. And this is interesting. Krishna's potencies work in the Damodar Leela. Because sometimes we wonder, well, Mother Yashoda had this stick and Krishna was crying and he was afraid. Was he actually afraid? I asked this question yesterday or Sunday in Las Vegas. It was split down the middle. 50% said he was afraid and 50% said he wasn't. Well, interesting. So, Krishna broke the pots. Mother Yashoda saw him being naughty and she thought, I can't do anything. He's too naughty today. I have to tie him up. It wasn't a punishment. It was just to protect the other pots, basically. You know, like what other... He's having tantrums. If I don't tie him up, then he's going to create mischief. So she was up higher. She was coming downstairs to go to the courtyard. And when she was coming down, she saw Nanda Maharaj's cane. I guess it was a walking cane. And she thought, I'll pick it up because this is serious. I have to show him a stick. And Mother Yashoda had never done anything like that before that would indicate that she was going to hit Krishna. And when Krishna saw that stick, that's when he started shaking. He's like, oh no, my mother has a stick. She's coming to beat me for what I've done. And so he started crying. I want to tell another pastime because then it will shed light on this pastime. So he was crying, but there was a problem. He's God, so when God cries, how much comes out of his mouth? Well, we're talking about, his eyes. How much comes out? More than a little. So he's crying and crying and crying, and all of a sudden, there's like a puddle. It's like monsoon season. And so Krishna's directing everything. And so Yogamaya comes and dries the puddle. Because why? If Yashoda sees that puddle, she's going to understand this child is not ordinary. So he's got to direct the energy of Yogamaya to come dry up the puddle. But at the same time, He wants to be afraid of his mother, so he has to direct Yogamaya to help him forget who he is. So it's kind of like he's the director of the Leela. And then, interestingly, when in the Leela of Yasoda Singh, dirt, so-called dirt, a lot of dirt in Krishna's mouth, like all the dirt in the universe. And then we know the story is that she forgot, she realized she was not his mother, Nanda Maharaj was not her husband, this was not her son. She had that realization. You remember the story? And she's just like, she came out of it. And Yogamaya came and said, oh my God. Well, she didn't say, oh my God. She said, oh my Govinda. OMG, oh my Govinda. And she said, this is going to ruin everything. So you'll read in Bhagavatam that then she forgot. But she had no remembrance that that happened. It's not only that she forgot forever. Because if she doesn't forget forever, then what happens? She can't have that maternal rasa because now she'll remember, he's not my son. So Krishna's energies are all working so well that it just gets set in motion. And if he needs the energy to make him forget who he is, it will come at the right time. You don't know who you are. And then at the right time, you know who you are. And Yogamaya will do everything only for the purpose of making it sweeter, more affectionate, because he's Rasaraj. And he wants the relationships to be sweet. Now, we have to end at 8:20, and we always have questions, and I have to leave right after class, so I'll just say one more thing. Krishna's pastimes here, as I was mentioning, Ananta Leela, they're unlimited. So that means, because he's God, one of the other definitions of God is everything happens by his sweet will. Why does anything happen? Because he wants it to. Do we need another reason? And some people say, well, he does this, it's not fair, he should do it this way. Have you ever heard people say that? Why does God do it this way? He should do it that way. All right, you know, write him a letter, give him some consulting and send him a bill. So why does he do it? Because the ultimate answer is because he feels like it. So, therefore, some leelas are done in a particular way, and another yuga they're done in another way. Why? Because he feels like it. Do you need another reason? So the pastimes, we say pastimes are unlimited in number, in depth, but also from millennium to millennium they may be different. And what's so interesting in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it describes the marriage of Lord Chaitanya. And it was like a 2 or 3 day marriage, but it explains like it actually was compacted into 2 weeks and months and years. Like you'd need volumes of books to actually describe the 3 day marriage. So that's another a way we understand unlimited. It unpacks. So like the gopis danced one night, but it was one night of Brahma. So the unlimited compacts into our time. A day, a night, a few hours, but within it, you could describe it perpetually, that which happened in 2 or 3 days. Isn't that interesting? So, we're all happy that Krishna's leelas are unlimited, and they're unlimitedly relishable. So you can read the same leela and relish them. So every night, Prabhupada would sit in his garden, and a few devotees would come, and he would read Krishna book. And now he wouldn't read, it would be read to him, and he would just sit in the garden like completely still and just relishing the Leela, hearing his own book. We know Prabhupada's heard all these pastimes before, right? Yes? So the unlimited nature of the Leela is that they're unlimitedly relishable. And as you progress in Krishna consciousness, the same thing becomes more relishable. Right? And the light goes off. Oh, I've heard this a million times. Now I understand. And just when you say, now I understand, stop yourself. Because 5 years from now, you're going to say, now I understand. about the same Leela or the same verse, isn't it? So we'll have this unlimited, now I finally understand. No, you understand something, but finally understand, that's not possible. It's unlimited. You will always understand more. And that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. You can always understand more. And now, look at, so many years after, what is it? How many years after Prabhupada left? 43, 42 years? I was reading this Prabhupada's tributes book, and I was in awe at the realizations that devotees have about Prabhupada. They're so much deeper than they had when Prabhupada was here. The appreciation of Prabhupada keeps growing and growing, isn't it? You should read these books, these tributes books. It's just incredible realizations that devotees have about their relationship with Prabhupada and who Prabhupada is and what he did. And that's the nature of the spiritual. Unlimited glories. So I would like to end here so we don't go over time, because I'm famous for going over time. So you have, yes, Bhrigupati Prabhu. Oh, we have internet questions. Internet questions first, or what? Oh, on the microphone, yeah. Bhrigupati Prabhu is so humble that just I feel so puffed up when I'm in his presence because I realize how proud I am. And it's true. I'm just telling you the truth. And Apoorva Prabhu also, just by seeing him, I'm so puffed up. Look at this devotee. He personifies humility. I don't know what humility is until I... So, you're all blessed to have these devotees here. Yes.
So, Prabhu, thank you very much. In that note of unlimited,
yes,
and you mentioned also how all these varieties of pastimes are very relishable. Sometimes, my question is, sometimes some devotees, I notice, you know, when they hear pastimes, if the pastime doesn't fit exactly from the book that Prabhupada wrote, the books that he wrote, they go a little bit like...
Some details are different.
So, and we just mentioned that, you just mentioned, it's unlimited. And many things happen in different kalpas.
Yeah.
And some acharyas from other, they have realization and it nourishes and it makes it so beautiful to hear.
Yes.
So my point is that, I mean, my understanding is, yeah, why not? I mean, Prabhupada just lived for just a short period of time. If he would have more time, he probably will give us that much. So can you expand in that a little bit more? So,
well... What Sachit Tanoi Prabhu is saying is that in some of the commentaries of the acharyas, they're filling in spaces, like, you know, the leela is being described, but after you describe the whole leela, you only hear about a few minutes of it, and they're filling in all the spaces in between. Well, this one said this, and that one said that, and you'll find that in a book called Gopal Champu. It's like details of you don't normally hear. And we also understand that the acharyas see the pastimes. And so they're describing what they see, so what actually happened and what they're seeing could also be a little different. But the main thing is, everything we understand through Prabhupada. So, you know, if the leelas are described this way or that way, that's not a problem. But if the siddhanta gets... Because sometimes acharyas may be preaching in a particular environment, and so... The Siddhanta is different in that environment, so that we can't, you know, like if you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he'll say things that we don't exactly follow. So that's where the problem would be. I don't see, you know, like one time the devotees were talking about some leela and they said, Prabhupada, do you know this leela? And Prabhupada said, no, where is it? And he said, well, it's in this Shastra. Prabhupada said, well, if it's in the Shastra, it's bona fide, because they were asking if it's bona fide. So, bona fide translation of bona fide acharya. But sometimes there's some philosophy that's not exactly the way Prabhupada presented it. I had read the acharya's commentary, like four or five acharyas or six acharyas, the ones that Prabhupada used in his translation of Nectar of Instruction, And Prabhupada's purports and their commentary was much different. There was like a transition. So they would talk about bhava, and in that same, Prabhupada would take that and talk about the bhava of book distribution. It was very interesting to see it. So we're going through that. It gets translated through that. You wanted a comment, Archita?
The problem arises sometimes when devotees give class here, and they're very good storytellers, and they tell wonderful stories, and they don't say where they got it from. So then I get calls. Where did that come from? That's not in Prabhupada's book. So it is incumbent on the speaker to say where they're getting their stories from. You must give reference. That's how our Acharya line. Jiva Goswami, Nana Shastravacharya Kinnapano. Why do we glorify the six Goswamis? Because they scrutinizingly studied all the revealed scriptures. And they gave reference. Yeah. This came from this Purana. This came from here. So whenever you tell a story, tell where you got it from. If it's not from Prabhupada's book, say, I got it from Shivaram Swami's book, or I got it from this place or that
place.
Well,
there's a problem.
Don't just sit there and tell stories like it's coming out of your head. That's what upsets people. Yeah. And I agree with them. They should be upset.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they call me, Archita Prabhu, that person gave a class this morning. Where did that come from? Where did they get that from? Give reference, and then nobody will have to question you.
There's a problem. I heard it from a Babaji in Vrindavan. That's when you run into problems. You know, I heard it from a villager, and you know. Because good stories always attract the audience. And when you hear these far-out stories, you're tempted to want to tell them. But at least you could qualify, I don't know if this is true. We heard it from a Braj Basi and, you know, Govardhan. This is what they say. But let's give Bhrigupat. This is a very good point. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, just on that point, Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita in a purport, when speaking in spiritual circles, one should immediately cite shastras to support his point. All right, so that's it. So, in the purport, Prabhupada says in one sentence, offenseless chanting of the holy name of the Lord is transcendental, and therefore such chanting it can at once purify one from the effects of all kinds of previous sins. And in the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 28, Krishna says that unless one has acted piously in this life and in previous lives, and the sinful activities are completely eradicated, they can't engage in devotional service with determination. So my question is that, if one is free from sins, is that sufficient in itself for one to be a pure devotee, or is it just one of the conditions? In other words, say somebody's free from sins. Does that mean they're a pure devotee, or could you still be free from sins and be offensive, say, for instance?
Yes. Doesn't mean they're a pure devotee. Just means they're sattvic, or they're in a position where they can become a pure devotee, because unless they engage in devotional service, they're just pious or dharmic. You know, when Prabhupada told us to follow the four principles, like if you don't follow these principles, your holy name is going to be offensive. You have to have some standard. You have to be sinless. Or, you know, you can't be perfectly sinless because you'll step on an ant or breathe an insect. But as far as you can consciously do, these four sins. So in talking to Christians, Prabhupada would say, you know, the Christians, they say you can't be perfectly sinless. They say, well, at least these four. Because then you can, that's the foundation upon which you can chant the holy name. And that's why when you're initiated, you have to vow to follow these. Because the purpose of first initiation is eventually come to be able to chant Shudanam. And how are you going to chant Shudanam if you're offending the holy name? You know, there was a group of devotees in Hawaii, and they were following two principles. They were hippies, so you can guess which two they were following. And so this came to Prabhupada, because they said, well, we're only following two, but at least we're chanting. And then Prabhupada said, yes, and it will take you 300 lifetimes for your chanting to have any effect, because you're sinful and you're disobeying the order of the guru. So, you know, and then Shastra also says, you know, the result of one name is you become free from all sin. But if you commit offense to a Vaishnava, you have to keep chanting. So becoming free from sin is not such a big problem. You chant, like all of us came, and we chanted, and then we followed the principles. And then we vowed that we would follow the principle, because we had to make sure we would follow, because that's the foundation upon which to put the holy name. But if you commit nam-aparad, then you commit nam-aparad, and that's Bhakti Siddhanta said, basically it's just the shadow of a name. It's not really doing it. And what's interesting, which many of us don't know, and I'll get to Parvat Muni's question because he's so enthusiastic, is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that the solution to Namaparad is not just chanting, but it's chanting with remorse for committing the offense. Because you imagine if you just keep chanting with offense, then you're just adding to your offenses. So chant with remorse so you can. So Vaishnavaparad is actually worse than sin, you know. If you're debating, should I go to McDonald's or should I offend this Prabhu, go to McDonald's. You'll be better off. And if you're debating, if I go to McDonald's, should I chant Hare Krishna to become free from the fence? Don't chant Hare Krishna to become free from the fence, because chanting Hare Krishna to become free from the fence is worse than going to McDonald's. So that's interesting, isn't it? So that's what the Shastra says. You know, one holy name, all sins gone. That's not a big deal. But you offend a Vaishnava, and Mahaprabhu says, your chanting is offending me now. Because you offended this Vaishnava, your chanting is offending me. I feel like you're throwing hot cinder blocks on my body. That's really heavy, isn't it? Yeah. So my understanding and realization is that we have to live a very sattvic life if we want to get anything out of the holy name. And we come from a very tamasic background, and this is our battle. You know, we're like, you know, I lived in India for many years, and the culture is different. And when I come back to America, you know, the differences become more obvious. And I see how much we're involved in a tamasic culture and the little things we don't know. You know, just like little things you do in India, and people go, don't do that. You know, like if you touch your shoe and then you touch your japa beads, they'll bang you in the head. No, that's why they have water next to your shoes. So when you put your shoes on, then you wash your hands. Just like little things. We don't realize how tamasic we are. You know, and so it's very important to be at this brahminical platform. That's my realization. And then when you chant, it's at least the platform. Doesn't guarantee anything, but at least it's a better platform. And then, of course, chanting to please Krishna, praying to Krishna. Yeah, that's it. It's a prayer. Yes.
Thank you for a very nice class. Very much appreciate it. Just a comment on one point that you had just made about Bhaktivinod Thakur, mentioning that really chanting is not just chanting, but it's also feeling remorse for the sin that you have committed. But in addition to that, one also desires to never commit that sin again.
Yeah, remorse.
Just
yeah.
Is important. Yeah. Because I may have remorse today, but tomorrow I may have a temptation and yield to it.
Yeah.
But if I continuously pray, please help me, O Lord, to never commit this again, because it offends you,
yes.
It offends all Vaishnavas, and it hinders my present spiritual advancement, and it hurts the whole world, actually. So I beg you, please, help me to never. And if I have that temptation, please stop me.
Definitely. Yeah. 100%. That's exactly what he meant. Remorse. Okay, we have to let Parvat Muni speak, because I haven't seen him in like 3 yugas. And we have to be merciful. And then we'll end class, but... Oh, no, we won't end class. Yeah, okay.
Hare Krishna.
If I miss my train, I'll blame all of you and send you a bill. Yes.
Thank you for your class. There's a book called Japa Reform by Mahatma, and I would suggest everybody to read it.
Japa Affirmations?
Yeah.
I just happen to have
very
it.
Very good book.
I just happen to have it in my bag.
And the second thing is...
Yeah. This is a book called Japa Affirmations.
The second thing is 1979 was the first time I came acquainted with Mahatma, and the first thing he said was, you know, you're going to be a devotee. I didn't know anything he was talking about. There was a preaching program at a house where we had dinner once a week. It was Mahatma and Gunagari, who became a sannyasi, and Gunagari Maharaj.
You're going to become a devotee. We're still waiting.
Hare Krishna. I'm trying to become one. I'm trying to become one. But there's 8 of us that are all initiated and trying to still stay initiated, still in the movement from Mahatma.
Hare
Prabhu. Jai Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Well, let me tell you a little bit of it. We had a preaching program, myself and another devotee, Krishna Bhajan. And anyone we would meet that was interested, we would just go to their house. and just keep going until they became devotees. That was our program. And this is the whole family of devotees. And he knows, right? Our Harinam Sankirtan leader knows. Yeah, his father and brothers, sisters, uncles, mothers, yeah, everything. So, yeah, that's a strategy. Don't leave until they become devotees. And some devotees used to make life members, and they'd say, I'm not going to leave your house until you become a life member. I won't leave your house until you take a set of books. You know, like, what can they do? Yes, Kriya Shakti.
Yes, thank you for your class. I think it's interesting that we get different angles of vision of a pastime from the different acharyas, because they're seeing this as a vision in their heart.
Yes.
And this is the pastime now of Dhammadharasakam, which is a vision from Satyavati Muni, right?
And the whole point is, the whole point I was making about Unlimited, that's where we can meditate and focus, and otherwise you're going to focus on kittens on Facebook.
And from different vantage points, they might be seeing the pastime from a different angle.
Yeah.
Like Mother just sort of coming down the stairs, or, you know, they're here at the grinding mortar, or something like that.
Yeah, different. Yeah, exactly.
I also think that, you know, we join the Hare Krishnas, and, you know, you don't have to work, but I think sometimes devotees work harder than if they had a job.
Yeah, we have some. We have a few paradoxes, don't we? We have a few paradoxes to work out. Because we were supposed to have communities and we're living off the land, therefore we wouldn't work. But before I go, it's time for a commercial. This book is called Japa Affirmations. It's based on my workshop. And all the principles are turned into affirmations so that before you chant, you can be in the optimal state to chant. Because if you begin chanting in ordinary state, you won't go deep. So a lot of devotees have found this book very helpful. And then my latest book, this is called Living the Wisdom of Bhakti. And basically it's taking the principles of bhakti and just dissecting them into practices and self-reflection. So there's a lot of self-reflection in this book. And, you know, like you, many of you know, I teach forgiveness. How do you do it? We dissect it. How do you actually become humble? What does it mean to have false ego? And so many things. So we dissect it. And it's a very nice book. If you like, I'm going to put it out on the table. And then in about 5 or 10 minutes, I have to leave to get a train. So come quick if you want to. Thank you very much. Always nice to be here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. Hari Hari.